Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk with a young listener.
Oh, cool. About what?
Old records, of course. This is going to be a really cool episode,
Patrick. Yeah, it is. I'm pretty excited.
And here's why. It's one of our patron episodes, but it has a little bit of a twist on it, which is that patron, Mike Wagner, he likes to sometimes gift his special perks that he gets from being a patron of the show. And by the way, go to patreon.com/suburbspod and you can do this too. One of the things you get if you're a supporter of the show at a certain level is you get to be on the show once every 3 months and you get to pick the topic and we'll talk to you via Skype and talk about whatever you want, music related, right?
Totally.
And Mike is like, yeah, that's cool, but I like to give mine away and hear other people.
That's
right?
So cool.
And so we did this once before. He gifted, and we had somebody on who you had a connection to, was like a young college student, right?
Yep, that's right. Yep. Somebody I work with who's an aspiring music writer, and we talked to them, which is a lot of fun. Right? Brogan McEwen.
Yeah.
She talked about her dad, and that was a lot of fun.
Right?
Yep.
And so this time we have on somebody who has called into the show a couple of times and corresponded with us, and that is Mackenzie Crenshaw in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, Mackenzie.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's cold and snowing.
Oh, boy. Well, I got to say, pretty consistently, as listeners of this podcast will know, Mackenzie has turned us on to really cool music and always chiming in with really, really cool stuff. So it's great to have her on a patron episode with her choosing the topic.
So related to that, Patrick, we just did another episode where someone mentioned Mackenzie's contribution to the 2019 Best Ofs. And this particular caller talked about a band named Duran Jones and the Indications. Are you familiar with them, Mackenzie?
Yeah, they're one of my favorites working right now.
It was very cool. We were listening to them for the first time and we just loved it.
I know, we were pretty blown away.
And they're from,
their latest album is super cool.
Yeah.
They're from Bloomington, apparently. Which I did not know. That's crazy. I didn't know. I've never heard of soul music coming out of Bloomington, Indiana. So this makes me very happy.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's like something that you think could be on the Numero label or something like that. It's got that classic sound to it.
Feels like it's something discovered.
Yeah,
you know, it was like long lost.
Bloomington soul from 1960 or something.
That's right. Very cool. Okay, so this show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan. Mm-hmm.
And I'm Patrick
Foster. There you go. And with us on Skype, as I mentioned, is Mackenzie Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. We'll get to know her in just a second here, but bear with us, Mackenzie. We've got to do one quick promo, which is that in the sense of maximum R&B, we are going to do a live show of our Rockin' the Suburbs podcast where we're going to talk about The Who.
Yeah, it's exciting. Apparently, all the people, all the young kids and a whole generation now loves to go out and see the live podcast recordings. So we're getting in on that. It's mania, really. So we're going to have our own live show, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about The Who. Yep. We're going to do like a big countdown show, talk about some of their greatest songs based on listener votes.
Yes.
We're going to have some other like fun stuff, and people from the audience can grab a mic and talk about their favorite Who songs.
That's
and
the key. Yep.
We're going to have some giveaways. We're going to have a special guest. It's going to be so much fun. And the way you can get in on that is go to jamminjava.com and you can get all the ticket information, buy your tickets, and come out and see us. And it's on Wednesday, March 4th at Jammin' Java in Vienna, Virginia, which is in the D.C. suburbs. So come check that out. It's going to be tons of fun. Yep. All right. So, Mackenzie, tell us a little bit about yourself and your music fandom.
Yeah, so I grew up in Columbus, so there was kind of a weird mixture, I guess, of music going on. I remember hearing like a lot of country music, but then my parents had really different interests. So my mom likes typical like top 40 pop music, but my dad is like a really big fan of Genesis, but then he also would play like a lot of rap music from the 80s and 90s. So I think actually I usually when I call into the show, it's about soul music. And I do think that the rap music that I was hearing from the 80s and 90s kind of played into that because I was hearing a lot of the samplings of those songs before I actually had heard the songs. And because I grew up, you know, in the age of the internet, I'm only 23, but like for the entire like history of music is literally in my phone. So mm-hmm. like, it'd be like, you'd hear a song. Oh, I wonder where that sample came from. You could find the sample, then find the artist who covered it, and then find the original song,
yeah.
and then just fall down a rabbit hole. So it was really easy to find like a lot of genres, of music really quickly. So I have a pretty vast interest.
I think that's such a fascinating observation for someone like yourself who's so curious about history and origin and lineage. It's so cool to be able to do that with your phone. I mean, that's a great advantage of technology. We're always harping on technology and shaking our fists at all them youngsters with their fancy machines and code and all that. But that's a great, that's a cool thing, man. I love it.
I mean, it's all out there for you if you want to go yeah. out and discover it, right? Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing. You don't have to go crate digging like you used yeah. to and try to
right.
find the stuff or hope that you hit upon the right thing.
That's right. Well, that one day. And Mackenzie, I'll ask you this. Are you a physical music product collector, or do you more just sort of collect songs and listen to them sort of digitally and in your mind and all that?
I collect vinyl and cassettes.
Okay.
So I got my parents' cassettes and vinyl when I was younger,
nice.
Probably like 12. And then I started building my own collection. And I still like to go to the record store, various record stores in Columbus and back when I was in the Ann Arbor area too. So I collect cassettes and vinyl. I don't have a huge collection, but I'm getting there.
Yeah. I was in Columbus. I think it was in September. I was passing through on the way to Louisville, and I stopped at School Kids Records
yeah.
in Columbus.
Yeah,
that's a cool
kids.
Shop. Yeah, very
yes.
good.
I hear it's great.
It's cool. Yeah,
it is. It's
a
cool place.
Yeah, I could have spent many more hours than I did, but I ended up being late for Louisville anyway because I stopped at record stores for too long. So.
All right, so speaking of records and old music, Mackenzie, what would you like to talk about today?
I wanted to talk about some albums that are turning 50 this year. When I was trying to find something to talk about, I was like, I don't even know. I was probably on Spotify or something making a playlist. And I noticed that there were quite a few albums I had saved that were released in 1970. And what was really cool is that a lot of the albums were really kind of critical, I guess, in me forming my music taste or were some of my favorite albums from specific artists. So I wanted to talk about some of those today.
All right. That sounds great.
Very cool.
So how funny is this? I just want to mention that, you know, we have this this young person on the show
yeah.
hosted by two old guys, and she wants to talk about old music.
Old music. Yeah,
right?
It's really fun. Yeah, it's great.
All right. So what are the records you want to talk about?
So Sunflower by the Beach Boys, Cosmos Factory by Creedence Clearwater Revival, and Still Waters Run Deep by the Four Tops.
Okay. Do you have a preference on the order, or do you want Patrick to pick?
Patrick can pick.
All right.
All right. If I'm up, why don't we talk about Sunflower since you mentioned it first? Because I think it's kind of an interesting band album in the Beach Boys history. And I don't know a ton about it. I do have it. And I got to tell you, it's been a while since I've listened to it. But I know it was recorded and released. It was released in 1970. But bits and pieces, I guess, had been recorded, right, Mackenzie, over really the post-Smile era. You know, when sort of Smile collapsed and there were all these legends about that album from Brian Wilson. And do I have that basic timeline right? Is that essentially what
yeah.
it is? Yep.
It's kind of weird.
Yep.
It's one of the few Beach Boys, I mean, it might be the only one, where every single member has a writing credit.
Yeah.
So it's weird because it's kind of a mismatch, I guess, of like Beach Boys eras, but it also kind of is cohesive at the same time.
Yep.
It's a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah. But, it's definitely different.
I think it's not one that I hear people talk about a lot. Not that you hear like post Pet Sounds Beach Boys albums really talked about a lot
yeah.
at all. But it's actually a really solid album if mm-hmm. you listen through it all the way through. So I really like it because it has kind of a full contribution by the group, and it's not just Brian Wilson kind of spearheading it like a lot of the other stuff.
Right, totally, yeah. And Bruce Johnston contributes a couple songs and sings lead. I guess the one people might know, Jim, is the song Add Some Music to Your Day.
The Sunday. Some music to your
know if you're familiar with that one. Okay, it's
no.
I don't
Forever
know.
Forever Too.
Yeah,
by Dennis.
That's yeah. right. Yeah, Forever is another one that's fairly well known.
If every word I said could make you laugh, I'd talk forever. I asked the sky just what we had. It shone forever. If the song I sing to you
my favorite off the album. Well, I like Carl Wilson. He's my favorite.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I love when he sings lead. But This Whole World was a Brian song, but Carl sings lead on it. That's a really good one too.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely has a very Pet Sounds vibe as far as like how full the sound is and how well orchestrated it is.
I'm thinking about it this whole world.
Drew you to the Beach Boys, I guess, in general, in terms of being a music fan, and then what to this record in particular?
So it's always really funny when people find out I like the Beach Boys, because it's definitely like not my brand, I guess, if you see me like in person. But they're actually one of my favorite bands. I think that I was first drawn to Pet Sounds. I was like going through classic albums when I was in the high school, leaving high school, going into college age. And I think Pet Sounds just kind of fell on my lap at the right time. And a lot of the themes of that album just really sat well with me. And so I did more of a deep dive into the Beach Boys. And a lot of those themes, even though their early albums are like girls and cars and surf and all that, there are some of those same themes, even if they're just a little more simplified. Mm-hmm. But I was really drawn to that because I was like an angsty 18-year-old. And I think that those songs and that idea and Brian Wilson's writing through the 60s, less so in the 70s, but through the 60s, I think kind of just fit that age well. Okay. And this album, Sunflower specifically, again, it's like the full contribution from the group and it sounds really different. And it is, I wouldn't say it's the last good album, but I think it's definitely the best post Pet Sounds album.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds really, really nice. So I have it on vinyl. And it sounds beautiful when I'm bumping it in my room. And it has some really good individual songs, like Forever by Dennis is really great. A lot of Bruce Johnston's songs on this are really good, too. Mm-hmm. And I typically don't like his music mm-hmm. or the songs that he's written. But I like the ones on this. So Sunflower to me is kind of like the nice album and the next stage of the Beach Boys career.
Yeah, and it's, sorry, Jim, it's interesting, too, as you're talking, Mackenzie, I'm sort of thinking, you know, one of the problems, internal problems with the Beach Boys was the fact that Brian Wilson no longer wanted to or could tour with the band. So the band would go out and be singing his songs and doing all this stuff while he was back in the studio writing what was going to be their album. And they sort of had to come back and sort of perform his parts, you know, to Pet Sounds and Smile and all these things, Good Vibrations being probably the most successful example of it. But here they all get to contribute. One of their big problems was, I think, you know, a lot of these guys was like, none of our songs ever get on the records. It's all your vision. And here you do get a chance to have those songs come through that they had been working on. So it's kind of cool in that way.
Yeah. I also think this is a pretty fascinating period in the life of this band, because as you mentioned, Mackenzie, you know, they started off hugely popular doing, you know, rock and roll party, beachy kind of music, right?
Yeah.
Chuck Berry based stuff. And then, you know, with Pet Sounds, obviously Brian Wilson took them to the whole different level, and then trying to match that really kind of pushed him over the edge, right? And trying to complete that Smile record that never really quite came together, really pushed him over the edge, and then led into this period though, where they were forced then though to be a more mature recording, you know, more mature recording artists at that time, but yet didn't quite have that guiding light that was Brian Wilson shining completely anymore, right? Yep, so totally. Like, what do you do with that? And there's some really interesting stuff that I think happened in this period. Then later on, they just went on to become a nostalgia act, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but this era right here is kind of fascinating to delve into, right? You find some really interesting work that either on purpose or by chance, I think, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And if you
I think that you can just see that, like, a lot of, like, Carl Wilson was a great producer, and I think that comes out on a lot of these albums after Brian kind of took a step back, that he was just as talented as his brother in many ways.
Yep. And if you look at the album cover, Mackenzie mentioned the vinyl, they're sitting there with their kids, you know, like Brian and Carl are holding the babies there. So it does have that kind of warm, you know, vibe. And I wouldn't describe it as overtly psychedelic, but there are psychedelic touches on the album too, without getting icky. So
I think this was a band sort of like in search of itself in some ways, right? So, I mean, they were called the Beach Boys, which was maybe sort of an unfortunate name, you know, as they get older.
Yeah.
But yet, it's sort of like, well, what are we now? What is this band? Where is it going? Right. And from that, you can find some pretty fascinating art, I think, that comes out of that.
Yeah, totally. And you know, the whole dynamic of the brothers is so fascinating as it's playing out in this period as well. And, you know, we know Dennis was troubled, you know, so it's very interesting. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to pick the next one from her list. All right. Because I think this somehow relates to when I was a younger person myself, which is the CCR album Cosmos Factory, right? I never had this specific album, but when I was in college, I bought Chronicle, and I think there was like second Chronicle also. I think I had both of those. And I will say that I guess quote unquote discovered CCR. I mean, I'm sure I heard them on the radio because they were huge, but kind of like discovered them as a, you know, as a real fan when I was in college and got those two records. And just looking at the track list on Cosmos Factory, about at least half of these songs are on those Chronicle records. You know what
amazing.
I mean?
Yeah.
Because they were just such hit machines. Yeah. It was crazy. So, Mackenzie, how did you get into CCR, and what are your feelings on Cosmos Factory?
So, just like you said, a lot of their hits on here. And so I had heard a lot of them on the radio before, or in movies or advertisements or whatever. But I really like CCR in general, but specifically this album, because they just manage so well to blend so many genres. So you have like country rockabilly, there is some psychedelic elements, you also have soul and R&B, and it doesn't seem like super forced. I think sometimes when people try to do like crossover or like a mix, just a blend of genres, it doesn't work organically. But I think on Cosmos Factory it does, and it's actually very succinct and like flows really well. Which is always surprising to me whenever I go back and listen to it. It's also a really good workout album. I listened to it yesterday when I was at the gym for today, and it's great. It's bop after bop.
That's a cool way to put it, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, think about the fact that between January of 1969 and December of 1970, Creedence released five records. This is the fourth of those records. It's mind-blowing. Totally
mind-blowing. It's insane.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I love Cosmos Factory a lot. And two interesting things for me are, you know, you think of Creedence as this tight singles band that had Looking Out My Back Door and Run Through the Jungle and Up Around the Bend and all the songs on this album. But also there are two over 7 minute songs on this. The opener, Ramble Tamble, is like probably the most psychedelic jam Creedence ever did. And the extended version of Heard It Through the Grapevine, which they obviously been doing on
stage.
Yeah, it's
like 11 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah, where it just really extends. It's pretty cool. And you think, wow, Creedence could do that too, which is kind of amazing.
It's 11 minutes long, but still too short.
Yeah, exactly. It could keep going on for sure. And, you know, think about the sort of psychedelic imagery in Looking Out My Back Door. I mean, it was 1970, but, you know, the psychedelic era, you would never have known it existed really, you know, from the musical style of Creedence, even though they were right across the bay from, you know, San Francisco and the Grateful Dead and the whole scene. But
Jefferson Airplane and all that stuff.
Yeah. But the imagery and Looking Out My Back Door is about as psychedelic, you know, as you get, right? Rabbits doing cartwheels, statues wearing high heels, all that stuff. It's amazing. Yeah. But he does it in like a Buck Owens style.
Totally.
Know, tune, yeah, for sure.
It even mentions Buck Owens. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that is it. So, this is an amazing record. And, you know, I think that what Mackenzie said, too, about the energy of the record is totally true, man. It's kind of tight as a rubber band for most of these songs. So, yeah, I never thought of Creedence as like a running band or a workout band, but it definitely could be for sure.
Yeah, that's
I recommend
cool.
it.
Yeah.
Greatest American Band. I think we've talked about this before. Yeah. You could make a case.
You could make a case.
For sure. Yes,
you
I
certainly
think so.
Could. Yeah. And I'll tell you, folks, as a denizen of used record stores, you can find this one, man. It's around. You can find copies of Cosmos Factory in the dollar or $3 bin for sure.
I'm going.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely worth it. And it's a weird cover, too. Like, what is it? Stu Cook's riding a bike, like inside on the front or something like that. It's an unusual one.
All right, so Mackenzie, any more thoughts on this record? We kind of did all the talking, I think.
Sorry.
No, yeah, and as somebody, like I said, I grew up with a lot of different genres. I grew up with a lot of, like, 50s, early 60s era of country music. And so this is really nostalgic for me, because when I hear it, I think of, like, my grandfather's hillbilly records in a lot of it. You mentioned Buck Owens. And, like, even, like, Traveling Band is literally just, like, a Little Richard record.
Yeah, it totally is. Without a doubt.
737 coming out of the sky. Oh, won't you take me down to Memphis on a midnight ride? I won't move. Hey, you need a traveling.
And that's what Fogerty grew up worshiping, you know, those 50 singers, for sure, man. He was trying to emulate those sounds. It's pretty amazing.
Totally. Yeah. That song is just like a shot, man. Yeah. That's like beginning to end. It just takes you all the way. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the one band, when I sometimes think about this, like, I don't know if you think about like classic studio setups, but the one band that Sam Phillips should have recorded at the original Sun Studios would have been Creedence. Like, that would have been one of the bands. Like, if
it would have been awesome.
Yeah. You know, that 56 to 60 Sam Phillips when he had the studio sounding just right. Imagine what Creedence would have sounded like.
Oh, totally.
There. Yeah.
So you also raise a good point there, the Little Richard comparison in Traveling Band and so on. I always thought that John Fogerty was one of the great singers of all time. I thought what he could do with his voice and the emotion he would put in it and the power of it put him up there with some of just the all-time great vocalists.
I would agree.
And I saw him about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago as a solo artist, and you know, like, in his 70s by this point, and he still could bring it.
Yeah, I know, man. You know, that's a really, really good observation, Jim, especially in relation to the last track on this album, one of Creedence's greatest ballads, Long As I Can See the Light. Yeah, very tender singing on that, and really hits the spot.
Oh my God, it's so emotional, isn't it?
It really is. Yep. It's a tough one.
Good one. I want that. Play that song at my funeral. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now, write that down, because
you got that, Chad.
You can probably remember. It'll be in a couple of weeks.
Probably. That's right. I was gonna say
the way I'm going.
I don't think I'm gonna be around.
Yeah. Okay. What's the last one here? The Four Tops.
Yeah.
So tell us about that record.
So I think this record is so underrated. Soul at this point was not even near having concept albums, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the closest would have been What's Going On, which would have been the following year. I think this is very much a precursor to that. It's probably one of the first concept albums in Soul, and I say this loosely because it was not fully written by the Four Tops, but the fact that it was cohesive and it was edited in such a way that it flows, if you listen to it, the songs lead into one another. And it has a common theme. It even has the bookends, so the first song being Still Water, and then in parentheses, Love, and then the very end being Still Water, parentheses, Peace.
Take my hand. If I don't write I don't brag or boast. Click my glass and say a toast. About my love for you. How it runs so deep and true. And yet it's so. Cause don't you know?
I also think the Four Tops are underrated, which is like weird to say for a Motown group, but I really think they are. And I really love Levi Stubbs. I think he's one of the greatest frontmen in soul music ever. And I think that a lot, he's often not brought up in conversations, but in this album specifically, I think that his strength and ability to lead a group really comes out.
Well said.
All great points.
Yeah. I do not know this album particularly well.
Same here.
I do know a couple of the tracks. The title track was somewhat of a hit, I believe, right, Mackenzie?
Yes, yeah.
And the other one that's really interesting to me is their cover of It's All in the Game, which is a cool song from the late 50s, I believe. I know it, or I knew it originally because Van Morrison covered it on his very highly rated, at least by me, album Into the Music from 1979. But also the Four Tops do a stunning version of that song.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know, that we know is good. You have words, you have words with him. Your future's looking dim, but these things your heart can rise above.
I mean, honestly, the covers on this album are really good. So Reflections is, I like it better. It's better than the Supremes version.
Wow.
And Elusive Butterfly is like a total transformation from the Bob Lind version.
Yeah.
And is also really great too.
And you got Everybody's Talking, which a lot of people, you know as a Harry Nilsson song that was on a certain movie soundtrack.
Yeah.
Right? But it was written by Fred Neil, actually, which was kind of a folk. Was he in the Weavers? I don't even know. But somebody from the 60s, early 60s, I believe. Yeah.
The other thing with this album is it was shortly after Hall and Dozier Holland left. Mm. And so they wrote mostly a lot of the Four Tops hits. And so there was a lull in their career. And this was really the first album they had that had some success, specifically with Stillwater Love, was a fairly successful single. So this was kind of like their coming back.
Yeah. And reading here, also served as prominent inspiration behind What's Going On, for Marvin Gaye. So when he started to put together song cycles, so very interesting.
Couple things I want to say about the Four Tops in general. So I hear totally what you're saying, Mackenzie, about in some sense maybe they're a bit underappreciated. I just think it's was so hard when they're on the label that has Stevie Wonder and the Supremes and the Jackson 5 and the Temptations and Marvin Gaye and it's like so on and so forth, right? It's like, how do you, you know, who do you bump down to move them up, right? You know what I mean? So, so there's that. But I also, the thing I love about the Four Tops and where I would agree with you on this is, I think if you're a rock fan like myself, like who grew up on rock music and you know later came into like soul and R&B and stuff like that, I think the Four Tops is, would be a great starting point to make that to for start sure. to cross that bridge because they had so much power. They were a singing group, but they, in many ways they were closer to a rock band I think than some of the other Motown artists, right?
Absolutely. That's a really good point. Mm-hmm.
And Bernadette, Levi for Stubbs. Example, man, that song, that song kills. But anyway, yes, Levi Stubbs.
Yeah. I mean, he had a voice, I think, much more suited not to Northern Motown soul. And if I had just heard his voice, I would much more affiliate it with Southern soul, which is much more affiliated with rock music.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it's so strong. And sometimes when he's trying to hit those high notes and he gets like the scratchy, like reaching voice, it's great.
Yeah. That's a very good point too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think their ability to, I think just in this conversation, maybe three or four times, we mentioned how great their covers of other songs, you know, have been. And they had that ability to interpret that was very rare.
Cool. These are great records.
Yeah. I want to go listen to all of them right now. I really do. Man, 1970.
There's really good albums in 1970. Yeah, I had to. It took me some work to narrow down.
Yeah, we're going to have to explore this topic further as the year goes along, for sure, 50 years ago.
Yeah, so if anybody out there has more suggestions, great music from 1970, we would love to hear it. Mm-hmm. So you can do that by calling
612-440-1984.
Or emailing rock@suburbspod.com or find us on the social medias. We're at Suburbs Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those places. All right. Any final thoughts, anyone?
I just want to say thanks to Mackenzie.
Yeah.
And big thanks to Mike Wagner, too, for this.
Thank you, Mike.
So great. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, this was great. So glad to get this perspective.
Me, too.
So happy to get this perspective on the show. So, Mackenzie, don't be a stranger. Keep calling in. Keep writing in, what have you. And, you know, best of luck. You're a college graduate now, right?
Yes, I graduated in December.
Wow.
So best of luck on your future endeavors.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You very much.
Yeah, I hope they include continual listening to Rock in the Suburbs and contributing to our community, though, really. It means a lot. It really does.
And my daughter's name is Mackenzie.
That's right.
Also, so I like that.
It's a great name.
There you go.
Spelled slightly differently, but I'm sure people misspell your name all the time, right?
Oh, it's super fun. Yes.
I mean, we get a lot of that. And our daughter's name is has a more traditional spelling of Mackenzie, and people still don't
get it
right. There's so many ways to spell that name.
Totally.
But a cool name. All right.
Yep.
Okay. Go to patreon.com/suburbspod, and you can learn how to get on the show your own self.
Mm-hmm.
And with that... It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been...
Mackenzie Crenshaw.
All right. Thanks very much, Mackenzie. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Just got home from Illinois. Locked the front door, oh boy. Got to sit down, take a rest on the porch. Imagination sets in. Pretty soon I'm singing. Listening to Buck Owens. Do, do, do. Looking out my back door. Tambourines and elephants are playing in the band. Won't you take a ride on the flying spoon? Do, do, do. One less apparition provided by magician. Do, do, do.
I have one last thing here. Hang on.
Okay.
Wait. How am I going to do this with these chords? I'm going to try.
Yeah. Let me pick the mic. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to pick the mic stand up.
Yep. Here we go. I'm going to try to turn the computer in a way that the camera will face the sleeping dog. Can you see? Am I pointing out the right
way,
Mackenzie?
Yes.
He's very rarely in that state.
Yeah, I know.
That's very true.